Welcome to another episode of Coaching Outdoors podcast. And today we are really pleased and excited to be joined by Gary Pratt, who is joining us from Bath. And we will welcome to yourself, Gary. I wonder if you would just take a few brief sentences just to give us an introduction to yourselves and to our listeners.
Yeah, so I'm Gary Pratt. I'm, I guess, an entrepreneur by history. I've been involved in tech most of my life since the early 90s, so pre-first dot-com boom and as in that world and as a founder. But I found myself then at the University of Bath as entrepreneur in residence and a teaching fellow, so starting to explore not the practical side of entrepreneurship but the more theoretical side. And that's where my thinking came together, and my we'll talk a bit about my history outdoors, but my thinking came together and ended up with my book, The Creativity Factor, about use of the outdoors for thinking and innovation. So, I'm still an entrepreneur at heart, but, like to spend as much time outside meeting and talking to people.
Outdoors and talking to people, that is what it is all about. And I love the title of your book, which we're going to be dipping into in a bit. And I just love this connection, kind of coaching, creativity. It lies at the absolute heart of it. So I think we've got loads to explore. But before we go there, this is our classic tried and tested question, which every guest gets to indulge in. And it's like a little bit of time travel. What is your earliest memory of being outdoors, and what do you enjoy about being outdoors?
Okay, good questions. Well, I've thought about this a lot and probably talked about it enough. I think I was, one answer is I think I was lucky enough to have a pretty standard 70s upbringing where we were a bit free range, and the only holidays we ever had were camping, and my parents, were drawn to the places like fields in mid Wales, so we never go anywhere popular. but it meant most of my holidays involved mucking around in streams and mountains and outdoors. But I probably the more practical one, and when I say it to people, they sort of, when I describe it to people, there always sounds a bit weird, but I had a hill behind my house called Cadbury Camp when I grew up, and on one hill we had a hill fort, a disused quarry, what was to become a dump full of old machinery. We had a witch's house. There were supposedly a mad monk, and apparently people would find birds with sticks through their beaks. that was my playground. So, this one hill seemed to encapsulate, almost everything that's outdoors in terms of den making and excitement and fear as a child or whatever. So that was my whole childhood, really, was playing on Cadbury Hill. It just seems like a magical place that's out of a book now. That's probably the answer. Just, one of those absolute 70s childhoods where every gap in your time, which wasn't school or doing some sport, was spent outdoors in rivers, woods, streams, hills. That was my playground.
Wow, that's lovely, Gary. I'm just almost going there. I'm similar child of those 70s, of that free. And what's already coming out was just how I can see that creativity in your as a childhood imagination.
Yes.
Dens, hills, the witch's house sounds fantastic. Already coming through, as you say, it's such a lovely question just to take us back to evoke what it was as a child that helped form. Carrying on from that, and we're going to move you almost slightly forward into some of your coaching backstory and yes, beginning there. And I wonder if you would just take some time out to share with our listeners that coaching backstory, but particularly the moment that you decided to head outdoors, and that sort of, when was that moment and that connection?
Yeah, well, I don't use the word coach myself, but that's because I'm not trained or accredited. Sure. I guess there's a Venn diagram somewhere of everything, isn't there? But I guess I feel like I'll use the word coach perhaps and mentor in my background as a sort of business coach and mentor in terms of dealing with founders, and that was a big part of my work at the university.
Yeah.
So I've always been a hiker, I'm a mountain leader, so I've always, you know, in spare time used the outdoors, and I think I always knew that it was my it was a place I went. So when I ran the main sort of business in my background that we exited, you know, if I needed time to think about stuff, I would take myself off to the Brecon Beacon. So it was always there as something I did personally. And then it was a mixture. So I started a PhD and soon realized that PhD wasn't for me, and that the book was a much better outlet because, you know, there was no peer review and it, you know, happened quickly and it wasn't, you know, years of my life. But I guess the freedom to start to research, you know, and going down rabbit holes, really. So I wasn't really researching the outdoors specifically. I was researching sort of creativity and entrepreneurship. And this took me down rabbit holes, which I got excited about and started to form in my mind. And then luck, serendipity, luck's always useful, isn't it, in life. And it was actually a friend of mine asked me, knowing I was a mountain leader and I liked going outdoors, and I was always telling people I worked with, let's not sit in this room, let's go out and talk about this. So just unformed, but very natural, if you like, is something I did.
Sure.
He asked me to organize a trip, and this is about 5 years ago. So I took him and a group to Morocco, which I knew quite well, in the Atlas Mountains. And that's really that slight light bulb moment where it all came together. I'd been reading about this stuff, I'd done it myself, and I took this group that didn't all know each other off on a, you know, we weren't bagging peaks and ropes, it was just, you know, walking and talking in the Atlas Mountains. And that's where I sort of properly formed in my mind that this is powerful, and actually people have very different conversations and different relationships, and deep stuff comes out whether you're, you know, aiming for that or not. And that's why I don't use the word necessarily coach, or I didn't, because, you know, I wasn't, you know, thinking about really what was happening. It just happened naturally. So that was the real trigger for me to formalize, one, the thinking, which turned into the book, and also my practice of actually, you know, proposing that to other people as a way to work. I still go back to the Atlas Mountains a lot. It's a whole other bit for me, is the sort of other cultures side, which I think is interesting as well. Being in a different cultural environment is very interesting for thinking as well. I haven't researched that much, but there's something in that, I think.
Oh, book number two, the culture factor. Oh, it just was a moment. I was in Morocco. I've taken groups myself to the Atlas Mountains, and it's just the contrast between the UK, you know, if you're used to Wales and the Lake District in Scotland, and they go to the Atlas Mountains, it's just so different, so raw, so exposed, so barren, bleak, yes, but beautiful in just such a different way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, similarly, I've gone expedition background, mountain leading, and that being out in a different culture, in an unknown environment, away from, you know, so many the normal life work, and yeah, actually the opportunity, the possibility, kind of what is. And what I'm struck by, and this is, it's also kind of come up in a couple of our recent interviews, is this natural evolution. It, you know, a friend just asked you, and, you know, it was element of luck, and actually in life that serendipity, luck, what just emerges organically is, it can be so interesting. And, you know, ultimately as coaches, you know, whether we label ourselves that or not, you know, sometimes we can be very much like goal orientated and process, and we have to have this vision, and actually sometimes things just happen.
Yes. Yeah. And following on for that, that was, you know, ending up here and talking to you guys, you know, the connections in let's call it the outdoor world and the coaching world have been fantastically and influential on me as well. So I met a coach in nature called Al Kennedy, who I don't know you've heard of, but so Al and I just absolutely hit it off and do quite a lot of work together. And some others, Fee McMillan. I know these may be people you, or names you know. So along the way, absolutely, the thinking's, you know, changed through those serendipitous and sort of accidental, you know, you should talk to, and you know, there's, it's not a sort of, it's not that classic business, I need to talk to these five people as a prospect. It's just, you know, some random bouncing around of learning from each other, which I think's been fantastic.
And that's what I love about this outdoor collaborative space community, and lies at the heart of this podcast ultimately, is how can we showcase the work of other people who are within this field. And Paul and I were just commenting earlier on how varied it is. Mm-hmm. It is just so diverse. And we have so much to offer and share. And this is where I'm going to segue nicely back to the book, because clearly a book is a great way to, you know, share your story, convey your message, and spread knowledge. And the sitting down and writing a book as a project, you know, can be, you know, super easy for some people, really daunting for others. Like, how did you embrace, embark on this project?
Well, I think I said, obviously, it's sort of the bones of it came out of a failed PhD. So, you know, what did I have? A stack of research papers and science, which I, and books that I was interested in. You know, obviously, you can read the book in one way, and I think it's quite obviously that way, about sort of innovation and entrepreneurship and teams and and that reflects my background. You know, that was the world I was in and where my credentials were, if you like. I think writing it and definitely talking about it a lot since, and working with people, you know, to your point about those varied people in the in this space, it's it doesn't really matter that it's, you know, you can read it not as a business book, but just as a thinking book, I think. And that's what I've come to learn. But the more practical bit was, I don't know, I've never written a book before. So I sort of thought, well, there's a book in here I'd like to write. So I pitched it to one publisher and they said yes. So then I had to write it. Is that luck? Maybe that's, you know, some zeitgeist in there which they picked up on. It's you know, maybe me being sort of ballsy to just send it to a big publisher and see what happens, as opposed to worrying too much. So, but that's really what set me off then. So I had to write it, and they were brilliant. So yeah, I think writing any book is probably hard, and I'm not the most disciplined. I'm not a, you know, I write 1,000 words a day. It was very much a very loose process, but with a deadline. But the beauty of it was that, you know, I experimented on myself to write it. So, you know, the outdoors became even more important to my life when I was writing the book, in terms of thinking about the chapters, how it was going to come together, and et cetera. So I found it a real privilege to write. I loved being given time, if you like, or being allowed, I don't know what the right phrase is, you know, contracted even, to research and think and write. So, yeah, a real privilege to get a chance to do it. But yes, it was maybe a bit of a throw out a pitch and see if anyone bites, and they did. So I then had to do it.
And my curiosity starts to, so were you stepping outside, Gary, to write some of that work yourself in, you know, yeah, absolutely. So was that with others, or, you know, were you going out on your own and just entering into some creative thoughts around the chapters?
Well, both and all of those. So in a very regular way, using the outdoors to, before I sat down and wrote. Yeah. Taking myself off into the wilderness for 3 or 4 days to, you know, do more concentrated writing. And it coincided pretty much, the writing period coincided with Al Kennedy and I launching what we call Outside Business, which is a Bristol Bath area sort of networking group. Mm-hmm. So we were out every 2 weeks with a random group of people, whoever wanted to come along, which has been a fantastic sort of community movement in the area. So that was a great chance just to, you know, I wasn't experimenting on anyone, but just, you know, observing and talking about what other people were getting out of being outdoors.
Absolutely. So just, yeah, just this resource right there at your fingertips, almost, as it were. Well, that's fantastic and really interesting for our listeners just to see that process of you going through that book and completing that. So taking that on, perhaps I wonder if you would be able to share with us, because I'm immensely intrigued too. What are some of those key, I guess, sort of lessons that perhaps are coming out that you'd like to highlight for our listeners from the book, and perhaps, you know, I think would give some real inspiration perhaps for people to use that creativity out there?
Yeah, so sort of centered on the fact that creativity is a big word, isn't it? And I do talk in the book about how creativity is not the preserve of creatives. You know, it's and I when I'm talking these things, I quite often say things like, I've even visually done it. I haven't got my props today, but, you know, paintbrushes, cameras, computers, whatever they are, aren't the tools of creativity. They're just the tools of creative expression. We've only got one tool of creativity, and it's our imagination. And when you apply that to business, which is obviously a part of the book, you know, I think the phrase which really sums it up and comes out of the research is sort of imagined futures. You know, you can't, you're not basing anything on some spreadsheets, you know, although that happens, or business plans or canvases. You've got to, you know, use this tool of your imagination to imagine what the future might be like. And so I really truly believe in that, and I'm not a big fan of sitting in boardrooms with whiteboards. And I talk in the book about how brainstorming's, you know, I think I go as far as saying people who suggest brainstorming sessions should be fired, but, you know, maybe not that far. But so that's, I'm a big believer in that, and I hopefully the science backs that up, that that's, you know, and you can think of it in, you know, thinking outside the box, whatever, but you've got to be using and getting your imagination fired up. And what then, I guess, I knew, but I was really pleased that the science backed up, was that being outside in nature, and especially moving in nature, walking in my sense, you know, are actually scientifically backed up as amazing ways to fire up that creativity. And I don't think it's any surprise, is it? Because I think I don't go deeply into the evolutionary history, but some other people do.
Yeah.
But I think it's just where we were designed to move and think. It's what, you know, our bodies were designed to do. So it's no wonder that, you know, it's a fantastic place to imagine the future and to reflect. And, you know, it all comes into it as well. But from my point of view, what I'm trying to do is get people to use the power of nature and moving in it, and all the science. They don't have to know the science. Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Practice it and you will have different thoughts. And I have a section on collective creativity. So I think it's a really powerful thing to do on your own, and I've experienced that. But I think it's even more powerful in some, because when I say collective, it might be two people, one-on-one conversation, but I do quite a lot. Most of my work is with bigger groups of people. And I think it's exactly the same. I think that there's a massive benefit to doing it, and there's plenty of, well, we can talk about some of the science, but, you know, it's a that's not my science. You know, the only sort of research I did for the book was more of the survey anecdotal side of, you know, do you experience this, and what does it mean to you? And then the third bit is really, I was then trying to build some methodology for people to use. And that's very much just born out of my experience with teams. You know, I've just tried stuff. And I say, I'm not a coach, but maybe some of the things, you know, cross over quite well in terms of individual coaching. Definitely less is more. I used to, maybe as an ex-businessman, I would try and fill my days with people with quite a lot of structure, and actually, you just let the outdoors do its work, I think, and the conversations.
And it is, it's that thread of science. I don't know, sometimes we get a little bit obsessed about, is it evidence-based? We need to prove it. Our logical, rational minds, they love it.
Yes.
We need the data. And actually, okay, intuitively, what do we just kind of know? And it just, you feel into it and it just works. And taking that, and you talk about kind of methodologies, it's that practical. It's the toolkit. It's the, okay, so how can we make this real? How can we apply it? What do we actually kind of do? And it would be great to go either way with this, like science, you know, what are your pet theories that you just love? And then maybe, I don't know, a couple of methodologies, practical top tips that, you know, our listeners love to have something tangible and real that they can take away and experiment as well. So if you're willing to go,
yes,
pick one, both, the floor is yours.
So, yeah, I think there's a backbone of science that makes sense in the book. You know, there's a lot of, I reference a lot of science in the book, and hopefully people, if they do choose to have a look at it or listen to it, you know, that'll come across. But I think the soft fascination state within the tension restoration theory or therapy is really interesting. And that's, you know, this place where your brain is, you know, restored enough but distracted enough to make good connections. And there's a fantastic paper from Benjamin Baird, American academic, called Inspired by Distraction, which was quite fundamental to my sort of journey here. And it's a proper scientific experimental one where they were testing creative reasoning, but they basically did it by having groups of people do nothing, so basically slob around. So this wasn't in nature, this one. Do a quite a taxing but straightforward task, so like a mathematical task, or do a slightly distracting task. And I probably got some numbers somewhere. I won't remember them off the top of my head, but I think it's 40%. The group who were doing a slightly distracting task, their creative reasoning was 40% higher than the other groups. So it's this magical state, which is very similar, I think, to the soft fascination state of attention restoration theory, which is, you know, your brain's doing something, which means it's, you know, it's in this default alpha mode and it's working, but it sort of opens up this creative bit. And again, I haven't looked at the evolutionary history, but if I was, you know, just making a stab, I think it's, you know, collective hunting in the savannah, you know, you've got to be thinking where your feet are going and doing cognitive mapping, but you can do something much more complex at the same time. So that was sort of quite inspirational to me. And then husband and wife team, the Atchleys in America, ran an experiment, a similar one, but taking people out in nature. And so similarly, took people different lengths in different natural environments. And they did a much deeper experiment with things like tech-free or not tech-free. And again, a lot of the same levels of increase in creative reasoning happened. So a lot of these weren't necessarily looking at the why. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm sure everyone knows the why. So there's sort of this inspired by distraction and not distraction, which is, you know, sitting in your office and having the radio on or the, you know, and then this bit that nature was just being out in nature, regardless of what you're doing, is really important. And then the whole mix of people, Marilia Pezzo, I don't know if you've, she did a famous TED talk about taking your meetings for a walk. Yep. A neuroscientist in Ireland called Shane O'Mara, in praise of walking.
Yep.
And a fantastic Norwegian academic called Mia Kynanen, who was looking at right down to tempo of walking and all sorts of things. But all this bit then around walking. So he's got this, getting your brain in the right state, how nature does that. And actually walking is quite, well, I would say this, but you know, hopefully it comes across, is actually, you know, an incredibly powerful thing. And there's probably lots of reasons for that, down to, I talk in the book about, he's one of the pioneers of prosthetic limbs, an American called Bip Rolston. And when he was developing the first prosthetic limbs, he was trying to work out optimal gaits and walking. And the same as Mia's work, you know, it just turns out that walking at a reasonable pace, not trying to get up mountains, you know, just affects your body and your mind hugely. So those are the sort of backbone of the sort of outside for me, was that, which just absolutely resonated with me, that, you know, just by moving in nature and walking, you know, your brain works differently. And then to your point is, how do you apply that? You know, it's great. Yes. You know, I feel good. I'm restored a bit, and I'm definitely sorting some stuff out here. But how do you potentially make use of that was the next bit, which I guess you were asking about the methodology side. I don't know the whole answer to the methodology, but I'll share some of the work I do. The most powerful stuff is always a mix between visual and verbal. Or when I say visual, maybe situational as well. So the two techniques I use, which always go down best, is natural storytelling. So on walks, I get participants to collect things on the way that just appeal to them. Some people are meticulous and want to find the prettiest rock. Some people just pick up a random stick or a bit of moss. And then at some point on the walk at a sort of predetermined place outdoors, I will get that. It depends on the group, but either as small teams or individually, to use those items to tell a story. Depends what question they're carrying, etc., but something around, you know, what we've defined the day for. And that's always one of the ones people reflect as being the most useful. Lots of people then won't let go of those found items. You can probably just see there's my rock collection or part of it on the wall. So I very much practice it myself. And the other one sort of related is, you know, the What Three Words app. I'm sure your listeners can find out, but you know, any location down to 3 meter squares gives you three words randomly. So I use that a lot in terms of exactly where you're stood. You choose where you want to stand in the outdoors, in wherever we've stopped. You get your three words through what three words, and you have to put them into some narrative. It doesn't have to be a story. It could be very practical. It could be, you know, the sort of mission statement-y type. You know, how would you describe your business as this? Some people write haikus. Some people make dirty limericks, probably. But again, one that they absolutely always reflect on, and what they reflect on both of those is, yeah, how they always feel much more creative than they tend to think they are before you've done it. They'll say, "I didn't know I could do that," or "I didn't know it would come out so well." So that's two. There's other sort of more practical, and some of my methodology is how to run sort of strategy days outdoors or board meetings outdoors, which wouldn't necessarily have to be facilitated. But yeah, those two, which I think talks to that, you know, you are navigating a space. So there's that side of it. There's all the world, the visual world that's going around you, the conditions you're in. But also, just by having walked for that 40 minutes or that hour, you know, your brain is operating differently.
Absolutely. That's, yeah, it's really lovely, Gary. And certainly, I would certainly draw our listeners, as you say, to the Shane O'Mara, In Praise of Walking. It's such a great book, one that I particularly love. Yes. And if our listeners wanted to just dip a bit more, as Gary has said, into a bit of the evolutionary, I think that book picks that up beautifully, yes, actually. So just if any of our listeners are keen to understand that exploring on the savannah and some of the stuff of our reconnection, it's Gary Wrightley, it's there. But I love that somatic, that whole brain and body working in a symbiotic way, just and of course, you know, how that creativity comes out. And what I wonder if you were able, respecting some confidentiality, of course, but maybe what have you seen, Gary, as the outputs in some of the people you've worked with? You know, we've sort of talked there about the science nicely into the methodology. What is it that you see this, you know, in a way, the sustainability, what do they head away with? And
yeah, there's probably lots of answers there. Definitely through the outside network we run, you know, we have absolute converts and addicts, and I have a it's not entirely based on, well, it's a tweak of some other people's work in my book, where I have a suggestion for what I call the 23-3. So you're 20 minutes a day and 3 hours every couple of weeks hike and 3 days a quarter somewhere out in nature. A huge amount of people take on the 20 minute a day, which is as simple as taking a different commute. And I do put some rules on that. And most of them do tend to take it up, which is key one is turn your phone off. Yeah. You know, actually pay attention to what you're doing in those 20 minutes. Yeah. So a huge group picked that up. One of my favorite groups we've worked with was they're very, very deep tech and quite complicated to describe. And that was their challenge. And that's where we started using some of the found stories. So that company, you know, absolutely got some clarity out of that. But what I love about the story is not so much that they liked the work, was they've actually now developed their own outdoor days, which is how they deal with new clients. So when they have a new client, they invite them down to their offices, and they've designed a whole outdoor day for their clients where they and they use a lot of outdoor metaphor, which is sort of one of the simplest things to do, but they will absolutely take them on a journey from the office to the waterfall to the, and that's how they then describe their business to them, because they found it was so hard. It's probably like it's an AI based business, and you're quite hard to convey that story. So that's one of my favorite ones. They've actually embedded it into their business development as how they deal with clients, which I really like.
Yeah, I love that.
I do quite my most addicted client, if you call it that. So it's good from my point of view that we're always organizing the next one, the next walk. So there's definitely how they've decided to do their strategy and offsites is outdoors. But they actually work in the well-being at work, but in the sort of future of workspace. So partly what I'm trying to do is get you know, to convince businesses and business people that this is work, not it's lovely, but I'm trying to convince them it is actually deep work and a place to do it. They've absolutely embraced that, but they're now similarly offering, you know, and helping to facilitate outdoor work for their clients, because they're a tech business, but you know, doing well-being data for businesses. So they're getting the data about all sorts of measures of well-being. I won't get into detail. But they're now trying to offer them, well, what can we do about that? How can we change this? So those are the two I like, where it's gone. It's not about me or more business or where they've actually properly, in my way, embraced it and building it into their business or their client relations, which I really like.
Yeah.
I love the ripple effect. It's that, okay, so this is, you know, this is my service, this is my offering. I work a lot one-on-one with clients. And then you discover it's like, oh, so with my team I've been doing, and oh, this other conversation, and now this business is trying this. And it links into challenges, which we'll speak in a minute. And it's this perception of the outdoors, this wider social perception that outdoors is for leisure, indoors sat down is for work. And actually this needs to be dispelled. This really, we need to get beyond that. And you know, your work is absolutely instrumental in doing that, and listeners and watchers, you're a part of this movement as well. You know, literally it is a movement. How can we move and be outdoors? So thinking about challenges that you have faced or are facing, you know, what were they? And I love the way, linking back to your book, that it came from a failure, like a failure at your PhD. I just think that is just something to really be an advocate for. You know, you try, you fail, you take a risk. Yes. And actually what success can come through that. So yeah, challenges and overcoming or not, would be great to hear a bit more about.
Yeah, well, failures are always interesting, aren't they? I haven't been brave enough yet, but as if you put the hat on as entrepreneur, and I don't, you know, does that mean you've, you know, it's a broad term, but you've struck it on your own in some way and taken some risks. So whatever those might be, you know, I think every entrepreneur or has a list of failures at lots of levels. And I do, you know, I've absolutely got total failed businesses and ideas. I've got, you know, ones that, you know, half got somewhere, survived, but, you know, you look on LinkedIn and it's just the successes. So I haven't been brave enough to put all the failures on yet. So I think I will one day. I'm getting braver. Start a movement to put everything you failed at on there. I think anyone who's been on, I've been self-employed entrepreneur since my late 20s. So I spent a lot more time in that world than employed world. And so faced everything in that, from, you know, near bankruptcy to, you know, taking the risks of selling the house and spending every penny, to all the normal cash flows and issues with staff. So in any entrepreneurial journey, there's all those challenges you've lived through. In terms of this business, if you call it that, or my practice, my challenge is that changing people's perception of exactly as you've described, that this is serious and we shouldn't book another, you know, I often use the word, you know, so, you know, the Watford Hilton, I'm not being mean to Watford, you know, for a meeting. But even if it's a beautiful oak paneled country house, you know, I still think that's my biggest challenge, is it's hard to get people to, yeah, not see it potentially as leisure and time off and see it as work. And for my work, and maybe that's, you know, because I'm not defined as a coach, is, you know, I get a lot of them, is it team building? And it's like, well, there is some team building, but it's not rah-rah, you know, rafting down the river team building. I do have some clients that I take up the top of mountains if they really want to. So that changing of perception is my biggest challenge in this world, I think, because I think an awful lot of people that have come across the book or read it or heard about it, you know, I love the idea, and lots of business leaders say, oh, I'd love to do that. But it's like, okay, when we talk about doing it, it's like, well, it's just not high up that priority list. So that's really my challenge, is to try and change that perception.
Absolutely. And Gary, I think your energy, I don't know, the word portal is coming up. There's something, I love the fact you said, this is serious. You know what? We can't mess around with this. This is serious. And there is something about that. It feels like there's something that you're giving out around, if I can offer a portal into this world and bring that, as you say, we'll call it the Watford office, etc., and out. And you know, when I was reading some of your website, which definitely encourage some of the listeners to jump on there and have a look, is one thing that struck me was, and I, like you, many years in corporate business, when somebody starts to think, and this is a pose, a questioner with a, you, why do they walk to the window and look out the window in their boardroom? Or there's something in that. And as I was reading your website and what you've achieved, that thought came to my mind. And that's something I would put out there to corporate world, is when you're looking for inspiration, why do you walk to the window and look out? Because that's probably, you should keep going.
Keep going out, yeah. There's obviously, there's a whole world of bringing the outdoors inside into offices, and especially at very wealthy companies, you know, the Googles, yeah, et cetera.
Sure.
And I wouldn't say I don't not like that. And there's a whole set of research around the benefits just of fresh, clean air in offices, which is hugely powerful. But yes, it's sort of like, it seems madness to sort of spend millions on getting clean air into an office and some greenery when it's just there. And
absolutely.
There's a guy called Michael DePaola who runs a very successful networking group up in Manchester called Fresh Walks. He's been doing it a long time and he's very passionate about just bringing people of all walks of life and business together outdoors. But he, I quote him in the book where he says, and I'll misquote, but the meaning's there. He says, "I wonder if in 100 years we'll look back at the working conditions today like we do at the Victorian mills and workhouses. You know, you sort of think we've come a long way, but we're basically, you know, or a lot of businesses, and I'm being, you know, very broad brush, you know, we're tying people to this desk in front of a tiny screen and they'll allow them to go and play ping pong, maybe." But I think a lot will still feel weird if you say, "Well, I'm just going to go for a 40-minute walk." I think, which I find very... Obviously, I find very strange, but hopefully that can start to change, because I think the productivity that will come from that would be, be absolutely worth it.
Very thought provoking. Absolutely. And what a great thought provoking finish. That, I mean, the last question really, what would you recommend as resources that our listeners, you know, may want to just go and look at, jump into, just to kind of understand some of this a little bit more? Is there anything you can offer for our listeners and watchers?
Well, there definitely are a good set of books. And again, I don't know about a lot of the books, specifically potentially in the coaching and directly in that in terms of practice. We mentioned Shane O'Mara's. There's a couple. I did bring another couple about. I love this one, which is Frederick Gross, The Philosophy of Walking. So this is just lots of great stories of thinkers and writers of the past, and so it's a really quick, great, well written, but a very quick one to realize that it's hard to find people from history who were great thinkers and writers who didn't use the outdoors and nature. That's the conclusion I came to. Hard to find the ones who didn't, which was quite inspirational to me. I also like Caroline Williams' book Move, which is quite related to Shane's book. So I brought them because they're much more, I guess, about the outside and walking, which is that part of my philosophy, I guess, and writing. I think the other one is things like outside and fresh walks. You know, I'm amazed now at LinkedIn about how many more networking groups are popping up. And some fantastic practitioners out there in lots of areas in the UK, which is a really easy way just to access walking and talking. And, I'm, whatever your thoughts on networking, at least it's not standing in a room with a warm glass of wine or, a cold bacon butty at 8 a.m, you're in a field somewhere.
Absolutely.
Totally resonate. And I hop back to, I arrived in the UK in 2015, having lived in Saudi Arabia, and embarked on a networking spree, which was just soul destroying. And that was what sparked me to kickstart networking. And networking, when you Googled in 2015, was not a thing. Like, literally, I think there was one guy up in Edinburgh who, and he wasn't actually active. It was just a past website. Now it is everywhere, which is just phenomenal. I literally had a request today about, there's a guy in Italy, like, "Hey, I'd love to know more about your networking. It doesn't happen in Italy, but I think it would work." And I was, definitely, let's spread the word and get some overseas.
And there's a book, I interview quite a few people from Norway and Scandinavia, and a fantastic group out in walking mentorship out in Portugal. So there's a it definitely seems to be a growing thing and a very easy way into you know, having different conversations outside. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it aligns, you know, so well, you know, within coaching and community building, community spreading the word, networking, networking. It's all part of this bigger kind of business presence, and all about connection ultimately at the heart of it all. But thank you so much for joining us today, and giving an insight into your book about creativity. And, you know, the labels coaching, entrepreneur, business, you know, ultimately creativity, we are human beings. Mm. We have, you know, this imagination, and actually it is about the future. What do you imagine your future to be? What do you want to imagine your future to be? How can you really tap into that? And actually by getting us, you know, we are nature, getting us more connected with that, getting us moving, which we're designed to do, everything just comes together. And I think it comes down to, we are complex beings. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's great having these science papers that go off and look at little kind of isolated elements of it, though actually pulling it all back together, what do we really know about consciousness? And that in itself is still, there's a lot of unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that talks to that. I often say that question around, is it work, is it play? Well, there's, you know, there is no work-life balance, isn't it? It's all life. So
exactly.
Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on. I love this. I'm definitely, for me, I'm taking away this like natural storytelling and using items and the what three words as well. That's a really, really interesting tool to play with. So thank you for that. And best of luck for the Business Book of the Year Awards.
Thank you. I hope it's just different enough that that's good. It could be bad. I don't think it fell naturally into any category, so we'll see.
Well, no, but good luck. Good luck.
Best of luck. So where can our listeners find out more about your work and get in touch if they'd like to?
So, you know, I've been in tech since the early 90s, but I don't have many social channels, so I'm outdoors too much.
Not sure what that says. No.
I'm just outside too much walking. So you'll find me on LinkedIn easy enough, and that's where I tend to post quite a lot of stuff. My website is garypratt.co.uk, and that talks about the book and other podcasts I've done and my practice. So those are the obvious places. The book is available audio, Kindle, if people apparently, I didn't do the audio reading, but a fantastic voice author did. And apparently he's got a very soothing voice, for, you know, a good one to take for a walk.
Excellent.
Yeah.
When does the soft copy come out? Do you know?
I don't know at all yet, but when. So it's published here in the US at the moment. So that was last month. I shall ask that question. Mm. I don't know. But yeah, those are the places to find me. I hope people take something away from this, and if they do read the book, you know, just start practicing some of it and getting outside. You know, my specific work is generally, say, with teams on those longer journeys of multi-day trips, and if anyone's interested in that at all, then they'll find that out on the website.
Perfect. Thank you for that, and we will link your website and all the resources as well that you have kindly shared. We will make sure that they're up there. We're really keen for the website to be a bit of a portal into different research that people can access it.
Fantastic.
And increase their knowledge. So that is what it is all about. And anyone listening in, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode as always. And if you go and test some of the different methodologies out, how it went, we'd love to kind of hear feedback from you as well. We totally understand this is a slightly different episode, you know, and Gary's not a coach per se, but I think very much there has been a lot that we can take away and adapt. And ultimately coaching, I believe we're a bit of a mongrel discipline. We're a bit of a magpie. We're a blend of so many different theories and concepts and ideas, and we very much kind of cherry pick what we want to bring into our practice. So hopefully this has ultimately improved, given you some inspiration and opportunity to deepen your practice. And as ever, this is one episode of many. We are storming through series 5. I can't believe it. So if you have not checked out any of our previous episodes, please go back to the beginning and start your way to work through them. If you're not a part of our LinkedIn community, be grateful if you could join as well. And if you do like what you hear, please do share. We are really looking to increase our spread around the world and ultimately, hopefully, encourage other coaches, managers, or ultimately human beings, get outside, connect with nature, and move a little bit more. So thank you for your time joining us today, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you. Real pleasure.
Thanks, Kerry.
Take care.